Right. My name is William Clegg Wilson, but I prefer to be known as Bill. Having been at Victoria Road School, Castletown, I transferred to Park Road School in September 1912, when I was aged 11 and three quarters. The only means of transport in the island then were the steam railway and the Manx Electric Railway. Buses hadn't arrived. I had to get the 7:35 bus from Castletown, and after some practice, I found that if I was a little bit late, if I happened to be at the beginning of Maloo Street when the train whistle sounded between Ballybeg and Castletown, and I ran all the way, I could catch the train. I didn't do that every morning, of course. You'll understand that. At that time, the headmaster was Mr. F.R. Grundy, who afterwards became the island's first director of education. The assistant headmaster was Mr. O'Neill. There were a number of other masters, Mr. Boardman, Mr. Greenwood, Mr. Long, and particularly Mr. Humphreys, who was, I would say at that time, about 30. And if ever a schoolmaster was loved by boys, I think we loved him. We didn't tell him that, of course, but we did. Because he was so friendly. Never lost his temper, never a cross word. If you'd done something wrong, he'd come along the aisle between the desks, give you a light punch on the chest and say, "Come on, you can do better than that." He was called up to the forces in 1915. And the whole school was given the part of the morning off to go down to the old Red Pier and see him off on the 9 o'clock boat to Liverpool. We never saw him again. He was killed in France in the following year, we were told. The school at that time was called the Eastern District Secondary School. And I imagine that the Eastern District would be in a sort of semicircular area from Laxey, Crosby to Santon. Pupils from within that area didn't pay any school fees, but we who were outside the pale had to pay 35 shillings a term, at least our parents did. Rather strange thing, we had two boys in my form from Sulby, two brothers named Kerfey. One was John Kerfey, who afterwards became a dentist in Ramsey. We had three or four boys from Kirkmichael, also one girl, a girl named Corjig. Most unfamiliar my surname, that. And a particular friend of mine, Alan Fairley, who several years later, when he was working for the Highway Board, was driving past the nunnery when some tree felling was going on, and they felled a tree which fell on him as he was in his car and killed him. Now then. We kids from the country had to bring our lunch with us or buy something to eat at lunchtime. And the place we lunched in was a large corrugated iron hut, which is now on the site occupied by the Elim Pentecostal Church. At that time, it was the Sunday school for Derby Road Wesleyan Methodist Church, which is now the Red Cross headquarters. The charge for having either a cup of tea or cocoa or a glass of milk was 3 pence per week, collected on Fridays by the senior boy or girl, and the banquet was presided over by Miss Amy Green. Sometimes my mother gave me sandwiches, other times she gave me threepence or fourpence to buy something. And I remember on one occasion I went to a baker's shop in Derby Road and bought a meat pie, and when I cut it open, it was full of grubs. So I had to ask Miss Green's permission to go back to the shop and have it changed. There was some spare time after we'd had our lunch, and at that time there were two bowling greens behind the Bowling Green Hotel, and in summer we could either have a walk down to the promenade, walk along the sands, and be back for 1:15, or we could go into the bowling green and watch the prosperous, elderly, portly gentlemen with their jackets off, showing all their gold watch chains and so on, playing bowls. One subject which we had a weekly half hour was woodwork, but I'm afraid I was never much good at that. In the whole 2 years that we took it, all I succeeded in making was one little wooden rack to take 6 eggs and a hang-up wooden letter rack with 3 ledges or little shelves in which you could stick unpaid bills and so on. That was the result of 2 years woodworking, so I don't pride myself on that. Neither do I pride myself on my footballing ability, because I couldn't run very fast. I was no good as an outside right, and I wasn't big enough to be a full back, so I generally got stuck in goal. We only went to the rec, as it was called then, the recreation ground, which are now Knowles Park, on a Thursday afternoon to play amongst ourselves. We didn't have football togs, we just took our jackets off. We had goal posts but no nets, so I was usually put in goal, and I had a sort of scheme worked out. You see, I only had 2 suits, one for school, one for Sundays. If the ground was muddy, as it generally was in winter, if the ball came at me that I could punch it out, I punched it out. If it came and I could catch it and get rid of it, I did that. But if it came low, if I couldn't kick it back out, I let it go in, because I didn't fancy being... The law at that time was that opposing forwards could charge the goalkeeper if he was holding the ball, and charge him and the ball into the net and score a goal. Also, if the goalkeeper was lying on the ground holding the ball to his chest, the opposing forwards could come along and try and kick the ball away, and they weren't all too particular what they kicked. Right. Our French teacher in our first year was a Miss Dean, and she had French Christian names for all of us. Robert, Albert, and all that. I was the only Guillaume in the form. She also taught us to sing the Marseillaise in French, and another well-known song, Frère Jacques, Sonne les Matines. And I remember a poem about a butterfly. The English translation was, if it's a fine day, I'm going to fool around in the fields. When I got to fourth form, I found that that form had no classroom of its own, but had to use any room that happened to be vacant at the particular time. We called ourselves the Wandering Jews. I remember on one occasion we were in what was then called the lecture room, which was a room on the upper floor with tiered seats going up row after row, a small amount of floor, and behind the floor two large glass-fronted cupboards with doors which seemed to contain chemical apparatus which was never used. Anyhow, one day, particular day, we were clustered there waiting for a master to arrive to take us in one subject. And I was standing on the floor in front of these cupboards, and I noticed that one door was open, partly ajar. And I thought, this is very strange, that whoever's been using anything out of these cupboards has not closed it. So I didn't take my hands out of my pockets. I just raised my foot and gave the door a gentle tap. And the whole glass, which was about 8 feet by four, shattered into fragments. And at that precise instant, the headmaster walked through the door. And he said, "You'd have to pay for that, Wilson." But he never asked me for the money, so I got away with it. And shortly afterwards, he made me a prefect, so I take it I was forgiven. At that time, fourth form, we were getting to the age of 15 or thereabouts. And we were becoming aware that there were girls in the school. And quite a number of little romances began to happen between boys and girls. Anyhow, whether any of them continued afterwards, I do not know, of course. I know mine didn't. What's next? At the end of your third year, you had what was called the Junior Cambridge Local Examination, which was possibly something approaching the level of present-day O-levels. And I managed to get a first class in that. The following year, we took, in June, Senior Cambridge Local. I got a first in that. And then in the fifth year, it was Matriculation Examination, which was the entrance examination to a university. But I got a second in that. And the post happened to arrive one day. My dad was out at work. My mother and I were at home, and she opened the mail. And she said, "Oh, second class. I suppose this is that girl, is it?" When I got to fifth form, it was the first year in which boys and girls were mixed in a class, and the numbers, of course, were quite reduced. There were, I think, six or seven boys and perhaps eight or nine girls. Among the boys, there were Bert Stephen, who afterwards became editor of the Examiner and a member of the House of Keys; George Cannell, who became headmaster of St. Thomas's School; Stanley Kelly, who was at Christian Street School in Peel. I don't know whether he finished up as head there or not. Some of the girls also became teachers. Whether any of them became heads or not, I do not know. I left school and went into a bank, but only stayed there for about 4 years. After that, I went into business.
I am Mrs. Isabel Jones. I was Isabel Johnson. I started a Park Road school in 1926 when Mr. Sykes was the headmaster and Miss Grace Hasler was the headmistress. Miss Green was our geography mistress, and I well remember her telling us a tale of when she had her holiday in America, and she came home, and on her way home she met several compatriots from America, and she was telling them about the Isle of Man. And they asked her, "Well, if it's such a small island, do the waves in winter wash right over the island?" To which we had quite a good laugh. Our gymnastic mistress was Miss Goff, a Welsh lady. She was quite stern, and I was a very feeble, tiny tot. When it came to doing head over heels, I wasn't able to do it because I get very dizzy. I asked to be excused, but I was denied, and I was told to kneel down, and then she took me and tossed me head over heels. Of course, I very nearly passed out. And when I went home at night and told my parents, they were shocked and horrified because they didn't think girls should do these sort of things. They were very old-fashioned. So I was yanked off to Dr. Hampton. And he, being a very old-fashioned doctor, had the same ideas as they did. Girls were not meant for gymnastics. So I was given a ticket not to take gym at all. Well, several other girls who didn't like gymnastics either followed suit, and there were quite a few of us excused gymnastics altogether. We weren't very popular, I'm afraid, with the teachers. I suppose the reason why the new school was made for the boys up at St. Ninian's was because we were so very overcrowded at Park Road. And during my first years there, we visited many other places to hold classes. We went to Salisbury Street School. We went to Victoria Street School, which is now no more. And we went to Noble's Baths for swimming. We took hockey and tennis up at the Nobles Park, and we also went to the Grammar School in Dalton Street, which is now the post office headquarters, and we also went to Kensington Road to the art school, and Mr. Archibald Knox was our tutor. He was very shy, but always had a merry twinkle in his eye. And I remember on a couple of occasions he asked me if I would take a note for him to his landlady. He was living there in Melbourne Street. So I said, yes, of course I would. And he scribbled a note and then folded it up in the origami fashion and gave it to me, and I had to carry that between my finger and thumb all the way to Melbourne Street.
And I'm Vera Collister, and I was at Park Road School from the autumn of 1930 to the autumn of 1938. The head teacher at the time I started was Miss Hunter, and she was the immediate predecessor of Miss Grace Hasler. We were an all-girls school by that time, and we had special school uniforms, which had to be strictly adhered to. Our winter uniform was a gym slip with three pleats at the back and three at the front. They had to be regulation length, very strictly kept, 4 inches above the knee when kneeling. The length of our uniform was measured about once a month by the PT mistress, and woe betide anyone who hadn't a clean uniform of the correct length. House ribbons were worn on the left-hand side of the yoke, a red ribbon for Athol, yellow for Stanley, green for Tynwald, and blue for Peveril. And we had to wear black woolen stockings, which woe betide you if you got a hole in them, because mothers said they're very expensive and you had to be very careful that with your woolen stockings, didn't have too many darns in them. White blouses were worn, or you could wear navy jumpers which had a red stripe, a couple of red stripes on the cuffs and round the collar or V-neck. Hats had to be worn to and from school, and in no circumstances were you to travel home without your hat. You got a signature if you were found out disobeying the rule, and if you had three signatures, you had a detention on Friday, at least an hour. Some of the hats were velour hats that were up at the back and down at the front, the same style really as the Panamas, but in a velour. And they had a special school hat band with red and blue, with a badge at the front which had HSGD on it. Or you could wear a little cap type hat which had a turned up brim at the front, and it had piping round it, and that again had the school badge in the front. In summer, we could wear cotton dresses, a type of gingham. The only concession to own choice was the colour. They had five colours, if I remember correctly. There was a red, a green, well, it was more a pink than a red, a green, a blue, and a mauve. Oh, and a lemon. And they were shirt waisters. No fancy styles or individual little bits to be added to it. We could wear light-coloured stockings, but we could also wear socks, a knee-length